Welcome to episode 223 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest insight scoop on everything 5G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by Gore Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. But before we get started, so Anshul, you're in a hotel room there. You're in New York, right? And you spent time with Motorola.
Yes, I was here for the Motorola launch and the subsequent launch party. And I come to you live over 5G because I do not trust the hotel Wi-Fi. That's and it smart. Is over my trusty little TCL standalone.
Yes. You've talked about that on many podcasts. And I know you're gonna get into that topic in a moment, but I want to get started. And hey man, it's financial year Q1 earnings season for the big MNOs in the United States. And I want to spend a little bit of time, run through the highlights, provide a few insights, and get your take on it as well. And so I'm going to go in alphabetical order to be fair. And I want to start with AT&T. And I did post some insights to LinkedIn and X when the earnings broke. Super strong performance from AT&T. And clearly, their investments in fiber and mobility are beginning to pay off. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about FWA and what they're doing with Ericsson. But at a high level, from a postpaid phone ad perspective, AT&T added 324,000. Postpaid churn was well under 1% at 0.83%. Mobility revenue is up 4% to $16.7 billion. What's really impressive is the company's continued fiber adds. So over 250,000 net fiber adds, which represents 21 consecutive quarters of 200,000 or more net adds. And consequently, the broadband revenue feeding from fiber was over $2 billion. That's massive, up 19% year over year. And in the company states that more than 4 out of every 10 AT&T fiber households now choose wireless. So I've talked about convergence and what that does and how that adds value, not only for consumers from less friction and billing and that sort of thing, but certainly it's also providing value to AT&T as well. So that's AT&T. Let me go hit, to be in alphabetical order, T-Mobile. What's really interesting, their subscriber growth missed estimates, but overall revenue was pretty solid. The stock is somewhat down in trading, but hey, we live in crazy times, right? And there are other things that are affecting the equity markets. And then Verizon. Verizon reported fairly strong earnings, but there was some subscriber loss that. And if you remember in 4Q of last year, they ended the year on a high note there, but basically with the losses in 1Q, that erased the net adds there from a subscriber standpoint. Overall, a tale of two cities. Next, what do you read between the lines on any of this stuff from an earnings perspective?
I think the way I look at it is the macroeconomic situation is unclear.
Yeah,
I see that these operators in my mind, they're like utilities. They are technically utilities. And because of that, they're crucial to people's everyday life. So it's not like people are necessarily going to forego cellular connectivity, but there are going to be some profit engines for all these companies that maybe are not as profitable as they could be. And growth might not be as fast as they anticipated. So I wouldn't be surprised if the macroeconomic conditions persist throughout the year, that none of these companies will hit the targets that they're expecting to hit, and that people will gravitate towards lower cost products, which tend to drive lower ARPU, which then drives lower profits. I'm looking at the markets today. All three carriers are down. AT&T and Verizon are both down 3% and T-Mobile's down 10%. So clearly T-Mobile got hit the hardest for its earnings. But the truth is that there are other things that are going on, like you said, and I have T-Mobile's topic for my other topics during the podcast. So I'll hold on to my thoughts going in that direction.
Hey, like solid insights, buddy. And the other thing that I'll mention to you that I didn't mention at the top of the topic was both Verizon and T-Mobile have announced some additional tiering of subscriptions. And from my perspective, that's likely a defensive move, a proactive move on their part to try to instill some momentum into net adds and that sort of thing. No announcement from AT&T on that point, but I just thought that was important to note. But that is a great segue. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I will also add that I believe I saw both Verizon and T-Mobile offer price guarantees. So
yes, yeah.
Clearly there's some sensitivity towards price changes with mm-hmm. consumers. And I think that might also be a driver of some of the decisions these companies are making.
Yeah, I think I recall reading something about a class action lawsuit, and I'm not sure which MNO it was tied to, but obviously there's some sensitivity around that as well. So yeah, those pricing guarantees, like 3 and 5 years respectively, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So it's super interesting. They're obviously doing what they can, what's within their power to continue to drive momentum given the performance with subscriber loss. But that is a great segue to your first topic. And you want to talk about T-Mobile. And we've talked about what they're doing with 5G Advanced, but they're going nationwide, right?
Yeah, they've, as far as I know, they are first commercial nationwide 5G Advanced network in the U.S. I think that might even be accurate for the entire world because everyone's testing 5G Advanced. Like, it's not really like something that they're commercializing yet. T-Mobile just flat out said it's commercial. The reason why this is important is because it will drive some really interesting use cases down the road. For example, 5G Advanced, there are new features in there for XR specifically. So there are going to be some opportunities for all these companies pushing these AR smart glasses and being able to drive these glasses over the 5G network through the cloud and enable new and interesting use cases there, but also more capabilities, more enhanced slices for different applications. And there will be things like L4S, which are going to be really big for these low latency applications, and even gaming, which we already know some companies have deployed as a slice, but also for safety with T-Priority. I think there's a lot of things that we'll probably see happen as a result of 5G Advanced, much like we saw with 5G in standalone. There were some interesting use cases that came as a result of that. So I think that will be the next wave. But what I do think is really interesting is that AT&T and Verizon are very much in the early phases of deploying standalone. Now that AT&T's fixed wireless network is fully standalone and Verizon's entire network for first responders is also a standalone network. So like they're finally getting standalone deployed, maybe not fully nationwide, but like a fraction of it. And T-Mobile is now in 5G Advanced world. It's really interesting to see that they continue to maintain their lead in 5G network capabilities. But at the same time, T-Mobile also needs to continue to convince enterprises and first responders that their network is the best network because AT&T and Verizon have that legacy with their customers. It's really interesting. I'm excited to see what we actually get as a result of 5G Advanced and T-Mobile, but I'm sure that T and Verizon are already thinking about this and how they can deploy this sooner rather than later.
Yeah. And I think from my perspective, it's all about the use case to your point. And so it's been somewhat nebulous and there's been some confusion around, okay, this whole NSA, SA thing, and what is the real benefit, measurable benefit from a performance, coverage, latency perspective, you name it. And I think T-Mobile has done a decent job with T-Priority, with T-IoT, demonstrating solutions and use cases tied to the power of 5G standalone. But I believe more needs to be done. And what I'm personally excited about as we get into the second half of the year, and to your point, and Verizon do catch up, and they're doing this in waves, right? So you just can't flip a switch and move all of your core infrastructure to 5G. I mean, it takes some time. But it'll be interesting to see in the second half of the year when we start getting closer to parity among the big three, who's going to rise to the top. And I really do believe it's going to be driven by use case. The most compelling use cases from my perspective are going to be within enterprise. So T-Mobile for business, AT&T's vertical focus on areas like manufacturing, retail, and that sort of thing. And then Verizon's focus in business as well. That is where I believe the real transformative impact of standalone will occur. You're going to see pockets of private 5G. By the way, by all measures, private cellular networking is now reaching that hockey stick. It was a very long tail ramp that we're beginning to see more and more deployments. I'm going to talk about that. Tied to Ericsson here is my third topic, but great insights, my friend. Let me go to my second topic, and I want to talk about AT&T. And they're crediting Ericsson, specifically John Stankey, the CEO, for boosting their 5G fixed wireless access performance. And so I can speak personally to them. So I'm currently doing the Pepsi Challenge with 5G FWA here in Bastrop on this podcast that we're recording right now. I am using T-Mobile's 5G fixed wireless access service. When I moved in 2 years ago, there was no fiber. Now AT&T's fiber service is available here. But honestly, I've been very happy with the performance for obvious reasons, given their network investments and that sort of thing. But with all of that preamble, I have now deployed an AT&T Internet Air 5G FWA solution at my home in the Florida Keys. I will admit, it's somewhat slow. I think you and I experienced that when we recorded our last podcast, and I had to wait for that upload to
upload.
But that should improve over the time. The Florida Keys are a very challenging area. It's a solid stretch of coral reef, and there's lots of contention. A lot of the buildings, including my condo, were built decades ago, and so you're contending with metal and concrete and a lot of interference. But I'll continue to report back on my experiences with Internet Air in Isla Mirada. But I say all that to state that this was in a light reading article, Jeff Baumgartner. And he talks about some of the comments that John Stankey made around how moving from Nokia to Ericsson and focusing on the programmability of the network and that sort of thing is actually boosting the performance of its 5G fixed wireless access service. So there were a lot of specifics other than...
I was going to say.
Yeah, that other than that was just the
so much
that John made. But hey, by all measures, AT&T is growing the footprint. In 1Q, tied to the earnings, they added 181,000 Internet Air subscribers. That's a gain of a significant portion of over 110,000 from the year prior. But you have to realize that AT&T is positioning its FWA service as a copper catch, right? And with the investment in fiber, they are strongly moving customers to fiber. They're pricing it so that they can do that at least 1 gig symmetrical. It does deliver the best experience. You and I have talked about this. I've been an AT&T customer, I believe, a fiber customer in the past. I believe you're one now. But by all measures, the company is growing it. They're being flexible. They're providing it where they need it. And by all measures, based on where they're at currently and in the light reading article, it's anticipated that they could support up to 7 million subs given where they're currently at today. But obviously that scalability, that capability will grow as they do things like build out standalone on a nationwide basis. So I don't know if you caught the news, but anything else to add before we move to your Motorola news?
I did not catch that, but it did make me realize that we are conducting this podcast entirely over 5G.
Yeah.
Your end with fixed wireless and my end with the dongle,
yeah,
which is fitting for our podcast. But I would say that what I do think is interesting is that the Florida Keys sound like the perfect opportunity to have fiber.
Yeah.
Because it's one long strand and nobody's very far from the
highway. You got to aerial though, because like they're doing a water main replacement on my key called Plantation Key, and burrowing into solid coral is a pretty expensive proposition. But here's the catch, because it's a hurricane high risk area, going aerial presents some concerns around reliability and resilience as well. So you're right. It is a perfect fit, but there are some unique challenges with respect to the Florida Keys and running fiber.
Yeah, but other than that, I'm just glad to see AT&T continuing to push FWA and using it as a complementary technology to what they're doing on fiber. Because truthfully, as a AT&T fiber customer, I can say nothing but positive things about the experience. I have yet to upgrade to 5 gigs because I really don't think I need it, but I want to see what the experience is like. Just because I can.
Well, and the 1 gig symmetrical is kick ass, man. When I had it in Austin, and dude, given all of the gadgets and devices that you hang off of your Wi-Fi network, I would think you would love 5 gig symmetrical. But in any event, let's, without further ado, like, you're in New York, you spent time with Motorola. I had a lot of FOMO going on. You showed some amazing devices, including a Razr that's got like real wood. By the way, if you can ask the Motorola folks for a demo for me of that product, I'd love it. But why don't you talk about the launch and the party and everything that you've learned over the last couple of days?
Yeah, this was a 2-day event, a big keynote pre-briefing, bringing us up to speed on what Moto is doing. The big developments are that they've introduced a new high-end tier, a true flagship tier for the Moto Razr brand. They've been slowly rolling out the Razr brand one product at a time since 2020, and they've been iterating it, and now they really have a truly competitive product. And they offer, the top end is $1,299, so that's very much a flagship tier. But it has a Snapdragon 8 Elite, which is a flagship processor, has a 7-inch screen on the inside. They've upgraded all hinges on all three models to a new titanium hinge that's much more durable, 4 times stronger. They've reduced the crease on the screen by 30%, so it's almost invisible. And then they also upgraded to a triple 50-megapixel camera. So there's 2 50-megapixel cameras on the outside and one on the inside, because the phone can be left in like a tent mode like this, or halfway up or down, so you can record yourself. It's great for people who want to create content, but also for if you're in the kitchen and you want to touch your phone, which leads me into the Moto AI capabilities, where one of the features is you put the phone on the table and it can see that you're looking at the camera, and then you don't have to use any hot words. You can just start talking to the phone and it knows that you're talking to the phone because you're looking at it. So cool features like that, where you can like interact with your phone, ask it questions, tell it to do things without ever touching it if your hands are dirty, which happens to me all the time while I'm cooking.
That is cool.
And then there's tons of other AI features that are also built in, which are capable thanks to the processors on these phones. The top end is a Snapdragon 8 Elite. Mid-tier is a Snapdragon 8S, and bottom is a MediaTek Dimensity 7400X. So the top and bottom get new processors. The middle stays the same. Battery capacities range are a little bit inconsistent. They're 47, 4,000, 4,500. So battery life in general will be quite good. They also upgraded the outside screen on the phone. On the Ultra and the Plus, it's new Gorilla Glass Victus, so it's like really durable. And then the bottom one is a 3.6 inch, which is like back from the original model. So they have bigger screens. The inside screen is 7 inches on the Ultra. I think it's 6.9 on the Razr Plus. And then there's the base model. So I like their good, better, best strategy. And truthfully, I want the Ultra. Also, the cool thing is the Ultra has 68 watts wired charging, which is the fastest of any flip phone or any foldable in the US. You're getting the best of the best with it. And like I said, there's tons of other Moto AI features. They're also running Perplexity for search. They're also running Copilot Plus. They have Gemini capabilities. And they're also doing stuff with Llama. That's like this catch me up feature, which is like if you've had your phone closed, you open it, you tell it to catch you up, and it gives you just like a summarized, like very small bullet point list of what happened while your phone was closed, what texts you got, what emails are important, what you might want to go back and look at. So there's some cool stuff. There's even some XR integrations with Meta on the Quest, having a virtual screen of your phone in VR. So they're really moving forward. They're really looking at ways to differentiate. Also, to your point, they also offer tons of colors through their partnership with Pantone. And then on the Ultra side, they offer an Alcantara, which are called Scarab color, which is like a deep green. And then they've got the wood finish, and then they have the red leather. So they're offering all kinds of different materials and colors and doing research with Pantone to discover which are the most trending colors that people are most likely to want to be seen with in public. And then on top of that, they're also using Pantone for display color calibration to ensure that when you take pictures on that phone, that you're getting very color accurate images. And that's basically it. The launch will happen, I think, in about a week. And then devices will be marketed a week after that. And yeah, I had a good time, good seeing a lot of friends and meeting new people. And they had a musical act. Her name's Coco Jones. And she was helping them plan the launch, but also reach out to that younger, more hip audience, which I would say, Moto Razr is the one Android device that has 25% of their user base is coming from iOS. So they are the one exception to the switch rule, because really people don't switch between Android and iOS very much, but this is the one device that's really doing that. And that's why Google's prioritizing Moto. I forgot to mention, the top end Ultra has 16 gigs of RAM and 512 gigs of storage. In terms of specs, you're actually getting a lot for $12.99, and it's a really powerful foldable. One of my biggest complaints for foldables, especially the flip ones, is they were never really as feature rich as a lot of the candy bar phones that we have today. And this one just feels like it actually has all the specs that you would want to have in a flagship phone, but also happens to be a foldable with tons of AI capabilities.
I've got a theory about that conversion from iOS users to the Razr. Dude, I remember one of my most favorite phones that I ever owned before the Apple iPhone was ever introduced was a Razr. Yeah, and I had a couple. And so I would assume that of that 25%, there are a lot of folks that are over 50 that are nostalgic about the Razr. Because I'll be honest, when T-Mobile sent us those pink Razr demos, like, when was that, a year ago or so? I had fun carrying it around and using it. Good stuff, buddy. Hey, I'm going to hit my third and final topic. And I guess my theme is Ericsson. No, they did not sponsor this week's podcast, nor did they pay me to mention them, but they're just in the news cycle here. But I thought this was really interesting. So talking about use cases, you know me, man. When I write, especially like on the Forbes platform, I like to focus on business outcome and use cases. This one's pretty cool. Ericsson's working with Newmont. They're a company I've not heard of, but they're a mining operator. They operate mines across four continents. And this was an article that was posted by our friends at RCR Wireless News. And what they're talking about is the deployment of private 5G across 14 mines in four different continents. And what's really interesting, what really caught my attention, was that for each of these deployments, they're using one Ericsson radio for full control. And what they're doing, and mining is a sort of a poster child use case for private cellular, private 5G in particular, just given the hazards that are associated with it, depending on what kind of mining is going on, just mining in general, that there's high degrees of worker risk and need for safety. And so what they're doing here, and one of the mines is actually in South Wales, Australia. But again, they're using a single Ericsson 5G radio to support full remote control of a bulldozer fleet across a 2.5 kilometer strut. And this is above ground. So you have different types of mining. You've got in ground, you've got strip and above ground. So this is an above ground deployment scenario. But I find it really, it's a great demonstration of the power of marrying 5G core and 5G radio to do something like autonomously pilot and navigate bulldozers. So I don't know if you caught the news. You may not have anything to add before we go to your third and final topic, but I just thought it was a cool thing you mentioned.
Mining seems to be very popular for private 5G is what I'll say.
Yeah. Poster child. That's what I call it. The poster child use case. All right, let's go to your third and final. And you want to talk about Verizon launching 5G networks license for first responders. Hey, there's a theme here. We continue to talk about this on our pod, don't we?
Yeah, so this is the Verizon Frontline Network Slice. It is a 5G ultra wideband virtual network slice completely dedicated to first to public safety and first responders that allows for the allocation of network resources within Verizon's network infrastructure. They say it has dedicated 5G ultra wideband network capacity, tailored performance, enhanced reliability, and flexible scalability. So this is something that they launched nationwide in 29 cities, including San Diego. And they are obviously trying to ham up their experience with first responders and how they're going to enable those first responders to have a better, more dependable experience on the network. And it is using 5G network slicing. So it's actually standalone 5G. It's not quite 5G advanced, but it will, I think, eventually become 5G advanced. And yeah, they're not really saying much more beyond that they will be offering this service for the same cost as current 5G ultra wideband plans. So it's not really going to be something that people have to pay extra for. And truthfully, I have a strong feeling it'll probably save Verizon money because a lot of these slices do over time. So I think it's a good thing. And this was literally launched yesterday.
Yeah.
This is hot off the presses, much like T-Mobile's announcement. So I would say this is very similar to what T-Mobile is doing with T-Priority. I think it's no consequence or no surprise that this is happening when it is. And I think it's great for first responders and public safety people to have choices. And the truth is, I think there's going to be a world where multiple networks get used by these public safety organizations because they can and they should. And I think safety is always critical, and being able to enable it at scale, I think is great. And I hope to see them launch more cities and have real nationwide network. 29 cities is pretty good. And I think that's pretty close to Verizon's initial 5G network launch, if I remember correctly. So it's probably a lot of the same city. And yeah, I think I'm excited to see how this evolves over time, especially since T and T-Mobile already have some kind of dedicated service like this.
Yeah, so I agree with you. This is a neat competition thing for Verizon. They don't want to be left out of the party with first responders. AT&T is built FirstNet. T-Mobile has T-Priority. And when T-Mobile first launched T-Priority, I asked the executives there, help me understand this, because there is FirstNet. But as I thought about it more, and as you and I have been talking about this today, first responders need redundancy, right? Think about it. Like, they serve a critical function. And if for whatever reason, you know, heaven forbid, let's say they're operating on FirstNet and there was a hiccup, although there's a lot of redundancy with FirstNet, it's a completely separate air-gapped mobile network dedicated to first responders. But to be able to have that fallback, that redundancy is really important. And again, I'll say it for the thousandth time, competition breeds innovation. And so I'm expecting now all three MNOs has laid down the gauntlet. They're supporting first responders. Now it's going to be really interesting to see some of the more bespoke use cases that come out of that. You and I have talked about really cool things like NOAI and what T-Mobile is doing through T-Mobile Ventures to get them off the ground, to do really innovative things like wildfire prediction and that sort of thing. I'm waiting for the use cases. And I think now that all three are clearly focused on first responders, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Low Earth orbit satellite is going to be important. It's going to be an important element of that. It's already an important element today when you look at FirstNet and you look at Verizon and you look at T-Mobile and how they deploy satellite-based colts for disaster recovery and for coverage of major events and that sort of thing. Typically, it's a traditional terrestrial cell tower on wheels for those types of events. That the colts with the satellite connectivity are typically used for disaster recovery purposes. But again, I think I'm all about the use case. And so it's going to be exciting to see how that all rolls out. But hey, my friend, I'm glad we were able to get this recorded before you jump on a plane and fly back across the country. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners on this week's topic is interesting. If anyone out there provides insights on a specific starting topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. I'm at Ancho Song, Will's at Will Town Tech, and we hope you have a great weekend, and don't forget to rate and subscribe.